You know, delivering truly comprehensive financial services at a level that's actually high enough to increase the number of referrals that you receive, well, that is not easy, but you can do it. This is the Advisor Pack Monthly Session. I'm Mark Little. I'm going to show you how. This last month, we've received quite a few questions and issues and obstacles and dilemmas from those of you out there as members of the Advisor Pack Monthly Program. Among those questions, I've selected three that we will deal with today. And as we go along, examine your GoToWebinar panel. If you've got questions related to anything that we're talking about today, just throw them up over the transom, enter them into the GoToWebinar panel, and we'll deal with them before we get off today. As is my custom, I like to show you the questions that we're going to be dealing with today so that you know what we're going to be covering. And again, as we cover this content, if you will contemplate the issues that you're dealing with in your business, feel free to engage us. Contemplate what you are struggling with most in delivering truly comprehensive financial services. And it's very easy to submit questions for the monthly session. As you go on to the Trusted Advisor Toolkit website to get to your Advisor Pack monthly content, every page on the toolkit has a Contact Us link, and you can utilize that to submit questions for the Advisor Pack monthly session. If we receive your question within 24 hours of going live for this session each month, your question will be considered as one of the questions we'll deal with online. So I thought this question was appropriate. It actually was from an advisor that had a few other questions as well, but I thought it was simple, straightforward, to the point. The advisor was simply asking, you know, how do I get more referrals? In other words, more referrals than I'm getting right now. And it's a pretty simple concept. It's what we deal with here in the Advisor Pack Monthly Program. As a matter of fact, the big measurable in this program, you know you're making progress, you know you're measuring success, if you're increasing your referability as measured by the number of potential clients that you're introduced to by your existing clients. That's the measure of success in this program. Well, just to respond point blank, and we'll go into this in a little more detail, but to get more referrals, you have to become more referable. So it really has more to do with the value that you're delivering to your clients than it does to anything else. If you think about it, we all refer those that we care about to services and individuals that we think highly of, that we value quite a bit. If we receive some delightful service or something that surprises us and we perceive as tremendous value, we can't wait as individuals to share that discovery with others that we know and we care about. And so the only issue around referrals that that you need to think about is if you're not receiving enough referrals, then what is it? What is it about the value that you're providing that is not encouraging clients to want to take the risk to share you with those that they know and that they love and that they care about? Okay, so let's think about it. What is it that that we need to be thinking about as we provide value to clients in such a way that we want to increase our referability? Well, the concept is, and what we deal with in the Advisor Pack Monthly Program is, what we teach is that you must do a whole lot more for a whole lot fewer clients. Now, you may be new to the business and you don't have many clients. Most of you have clients. And so the concept that we deal with here is, rather than having a ton of clients that you do a little bit for, then as opposed to that, concentrate on doing a whole lot more for a whole lot fewer clients. And that is to say, we focus on delivering truly comprehensive financial services, which is quite labor intensive. And for the commitment that you make in this program to deliver truly comprehensive financial services, you're making a decision on the part of your team to deliver at a much higher level. So it's very labor intensive to deliver at the level that we're teaching. And beyond that, you have to understand some things about the standards that your clients have. In other words, what the standards are in the minds of your client before they will introduce you to other people. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But let's talk about the stages of client value. So if to get more referrals, you have to be more referable, what are the stages that you and your business need to go through? In other words, to get to a higher level of referability and to get to that level that clients will refer you to everyone that they know. Well, the first stage of client value is competence. The first thing that you'll need to do is get the services in place. Become really good at what you do. This in and of itself is astounding to clients. So they are so accustomed to incompetence or low-value competence that when they see competence, they know it, they respect it, they value it. It is impressive in and of itself. The second stage of client value is becoming irreplaceable. So it's one thing to be good at what you do, to be competent. It's another thing to be so good at what you do that you are impossible to replace. And then the third level or stage of client value is to become indispensable. And we'll talk about that as well. So let's focus on competence first. This is where you build your deliverables team of subject matter experts. We've spoken in these monthly sessions about creating client deliverables, establishing a deliverables team of subject matter experts who provide oversight. But this is the level in which you actually get truly comprehensive financial services in place, and you get it in place in a solid level. You get your team in place, you get your deliverables in place, and you start delivering at a level that others in your community are not delivering. So that is competence. You're capable of getting a client's financial house in perfect order, and you're capable of keeping it that way for the rest of their lives. So this is an accomplishment. This is something that the vast majority of clients claim, and we've got data on this, claim that they can't find anywhere. They can't find a competent advisor who actually delivers in all areas of personal finance. That is to say, money management, financial planning, insurance, estate planning, and tax. Clients who are seeking, affluent financial delegator clients who are actually seeking truly comprehensive financial services, which we've shared in past episodes, is millions of multimillionaires out there who are actually seeking this service and claim that they can't find it anywhere. What they say they can find is an advisor who is a specialist in a certain area. Maybe it's estate planning, maybe it's money management, maybe it's financial planning, but not in all areas. It's clients claim that they cannot find a competent advisor who is capable and happy and willing to coordinate all areas of personal finance, including all those areas that I mentioned. So if you become competent in truly comprehensive financial services, that is to say, coordinating all these areas of clients' personal financial affairs, then you have become competent at something that the vast majority of clients who are seeking this level of service claim does not exist. So you've accomplished quite a bit. I always laugh. The show, there's a show on Netflix called House of Cards, and the key character is Frank Underwood. And he made a comment. He's watching someone in a committee meeting in Washington who's really good at what they do, and he's just spellbound. He's just staring at her as she's talking in this committee meeting. And he says, competence is such an exotic bird in these woods that I always appreciate it when I see it. And I laughed because this is what affluent clients tell me about seeking a comprehensive financial advisor, that it is so rare that they are stunned when they come across it. So becoming competent is the first stage. Second stage is becoming irreplaceable. In other words, becoming so competent that an advisor cannot find any advisor anywhere at any price to do, not only to do deliver comprehensive financial services, but to deliver it at a level that is impossible to find elsewhere. So to be so good at what you're doing that in the mind of the client, you are irreplaceable. It would be so painful to try to contemplate replacing you that that a client worries about it. So you've actually created at this stage a financial services monopoly. You've created a business monopoly whereby in the mind of your clients, you have actually radically differentiated yourself in a way that clients believe they cannot replace you. And so this is the next stage up from competence. And your goal is to accomplish irreplaceability and to become irreplaceable and to establish, that is what you are doing. You are establishing in the work we're doing here together, a business monopoly. Now, just to point out some kind of ad hoc topics that we've covered in past episodes that you can go back and listen to. In episode 2 of this Advisor Pack monthly session, we talked about developing client deliverables. In other words, putting together the actual services that will not only make you competent, but will begin the process of making you irreplaceable. In episode 3 of this Advisor Pack monthly session, we talked about making an advisor pact with your client. And that is, you know, something that clients claim they can't find anywhere, someone to who will protect them. It's offering protection, attention, coordination, and transparency. You can go back and listen to episode 3 and hear how we describe that. But in essence, an advisor who pledges to the client that you are there and in their life to offer protection for their financial assets and for their vision of their ideal life, that you will be that protector and that you'll pay attention and stay on top of things and make course corrections proactively when needed, which is frequently, and to coordinate all the personal financial affairs for every client, to coordinate the financial people in their life, their accountant and their lawyers and insurance people and so forth, money managers, but also to coordinate all the recommendations to make sure they're in alignment with the overarching strategy. And transparency. You are the one single individual in the client's life who will offer transparency and will identify potential conflicts of interest when you identify them in the people and the services that the client deploys. So episode number 3, we talk about making an advisor pact with every client. Episode 4, we talk about providing oversight. This is the one element of a client's financial life that if you encounter a very affluent person who seems to have their financial life in fairly good order, the one thing that is typically missing is oversight. Where is the overarching plan and where is the mechanism to review the work of the financial people in the client's life? And then in episode 4, we talk about delivering on the 3-meeting process, creating a system and mechanism to put into place so that you're meeting with clients not only frequently, but you are creating a platform whereby your team can deliver truly comprehensive financial services. This is one of the biggest complaints that clients have is they don't know when they're going to be meeting with their advisor next, and the 3-meeting process resolves that issue. So practically in every episode, we talk about how to become irreplaceable, and after you've become competent, irreplaceability is the next step. And then the final stage of client value is to become indispensable. So you're now irreplaceable, and it would be very difficult in the mind of the client for you to be replaced. But at some point, you transcend or transform into this belief in the client's mind that that you are and have become indispensable in their life. They cannot function without you. They feel at great risk of losing you, and they just cannot imagine functioning in their life without you. So that is the goal. Your goal is to become indispensable in the lives of your clients. We have talked about in past episodes that the percentage of your clients who need to proactively describe you as indispensable should be in the 95% range. So if 95% of your clients describe you as indispensable, then your referrals will be you'll begin receiving referrals at rates that other advisors can only dream of. So we talked in episode one about the advisor value score. I would encourage you to go back and review that if you have not already implemented the advisor value score system. This advisor value score is the mechanism that we recommend, that we use at our own firm to establish the indispensability of your client community. So what percentage of your clients view you as indispensable? The advisor value score system will establish that and help you understand that. And in addition to creating and understanding that percentage of your client base that view you as indispensable, you'll also get actionable data from your clients using the advisor value score method to understand exactly what you need to do and take action on in your business to become even more indispensable. So we encourage you to do that. So the stages of client value are first establishing competence, then becoming irreplaceable, and then ultimately working to become indispensable in the minds of your clients. And the thing, I mentioned standards before, so you have to understand something about your client's standards. I think this is one of the toughest things for advisors to really get their mind around at the beginning of working with us, and that is to understand that your standards, that is to say, as an advisor, your standards are lower than your clients. And you're thinking, how can that be? You know, your standards are very high. As a matter of fact, just being a part of this program, the Advisor Pact Monthly program, establishes that your standards are higher than the average advisor. Well, that may be true, and I would admit that probably is true. What I'm saying is that what you need to understand is that your standards are lower than your clients. And the reason that I'm saying that is, it's until you're receiving more referrals than you can handle. This is the big takeaway that I had to grasp in my own business 15 years ago, that I had to recognize the fact that my standards were lower than my clients, and that was why I was not getting as many referrals as I wanted. And as I acknowledged this reality, and I began moving my own standards closer to the standards of the clients, then I started getting more referrals. And I ultimately got to the point where we were receiving so many referrals, we had a difficult time understanding how to process them or how to meet with them, how to sit down with these referrals that were coming in such great numbers that we had to actually create processes to streamline our business to be able to see these referrals. We were at one point, it was almost 30 days to get in to schedule a meeting to see me if you were referred into our firm. And so we had to sit down as a team and fix that process, you know, make it to where if somebody's referred into our firm, I'm able to sit down with them right away. So I think what you need to accept is that your standards are not as high as your clients. If they were, then you'd be getting more referrals than you know what to do with. So I think another way to think about this, if your team is so good, then why aren't you getting more referrals? And the reality is, if your team is at the client's standards, then your clients would be introducing you to everybody that they know without you having to ask them to. So one of the things you need to do is to let your team know that one of the measures of their value, that is to say, if you have subject matter experts on your team, Well, that would include your clerical staff as well. So if your administrative manager, your tax subject matter expert, your estate planning lawyer, your financial planner, your insurance people, if everybody on your team is delivering value at the at a level that's close to the client's value, the client standards, then you will be receiving large numbers of referrals. And you need to let your team know that the measure of their value is the number of referrals that you're receiving. And if you're not receiving enough referrals, then everybody on your team needs to just accept and acknowledge that we need to continue increasing value until referrals increase. And very few teams do that, measure success by the referrals. So you've got to acquire team members. So here's my point. If your standards are less than your clients, then you need to make sure that as you acquire team members, their standards are higher than yours. It's important that you get everybody as close to the client's standards as possible. If your job as an advisor is to serve your clients and to go out and get new ones, and those are your two primary priorities, then it is up to your team to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. So it's incumbent upon you to make sure that as you acquire team members, they realize that they have to have standards that are higher than yours. So there are reasons that some teams are not able or slow in implementing these stages of client value, that is to say becoming competent and then becoming irreplaceable and then becoming indispensable. Sometimes it's because the advisor or the team members aren't coachable. They think they know it all, and so they are closed to hearing any advice from anyone, no matter how compelling it is. And so I do get this feeling when I'm talking to some advisors, but not often. What I'm encouraging you to do is to assess that in your own team member. Do you have team members who are not coachable? Do they think they know it all? Are they closed to advice, and no matter how compelling? And are they open to this notion that if they were good enough, if they were delivering value at the standards close to the clients, that the clients, you wouldn't even have to be asking the client for referrals. They would be spontaneously recommending you to everyone that they know. So some highly successful advisors who would rather give in to their team actually advocate for lower standards. So, you know, it's very tough as you're building your team to encourage a team to deliver more effort. It takes more effort to deliver at the levels that we're talking about. And there are some advisors who are very successful who have teams who push back on doing more, making a greater effort than you currently are. And in those cases, you just have to be recognizing that what you're talking about with a team, if you're capitulating to a team that is lobbying you as an advisor to lower the standards, so that, in other words, saying things like, well, the client's getting what they're paying for, or nobody's leaving us, so why are we, you know, contemplating working at a higher level? Well, you know, we have no clients that are firing us or anything. If you capitulate to that kind of logic, then what you're in essence doing is you're advocating for lower standards. And you just need to recognize that it is very alluring to fall into this trap of delivering at a level that's lower than the client's standards. But if you will embrace the idea that I'm conveying, that the client standards are high and the client feels for the money that they're paying, they should be getting a lot of value. And if you will get your team to kind of release their concerns about putting forth extra effort and get them more to embrace the idea that if our team is capable of delivering high value, then, you know, we will adopt a mindset that we are going to continue increasing client value until referrals increase, then you have a team that's on the right track. And that's what I'm encouraging. And I often hear, or I'm occasionally accused of having ridiculously high standards. And the point that I like to make as we talk about setting standards this high, that we continue adding value to clients until they start referring, I would point out these are not my standards, and they're not your standards. You can tell your team that these are not any of our standards. The reality is these are the client's standards. And all that I've ever done is that more than most advisors, what I've done is I've studied ideal clients. I've studied what their standards are. I've carefully looked at the reasoning behind clients who I've looked at clients who actually introduce their advisors to many, many, many other people. And so curious why would an individual, an affluent individual, take the risk of introducing their advisor to everyone that they know versus looking at clients who never refer. And so the fact that I've studied this very carefully, what I have established is that the truth is clients who don't refer feel that the advisor's standards are not the same as theirs. So therefore, if the standards are not as high as the client thinks they are, then whether you agree or not, you and your team, you may think that you're delivering spectacular value, but if the client disagrees, they just quietly don't refer you. So they may not fire you. You may be competent, but they're not at the point in their mind that they think that your standards are high enough that they would risk sharing your name with someone that they care about. So clients who do refer are just the opposite. They have come to the belief that what you're providing to them is at or above the standards that they've set. So that's what I'm encouraging you. Don't settle upon lower standards. Encourage your team to set the standards very high and to set the standards being the referrals. So if you're receiving lots of referrals, then your standards are high. If you're not receiving more referrals than you can handle, then just accept and get your team to accept the fact that your standards are not as high as your clients. Okay, next question. Pushing my team to deliver more seems divisive, and I don't want my team to leave me. What do I do? Okay, so this is from an advisor who's been working with us for a while, and kind of to the point that we were just talking about, have set the standards for the team, and now believe that setting high standards, at least in this team, seems to be divisive. So it's causing arguments, it's causing angst, delivering at this high level. Well, let's continue on the topic that we've been talking about, which part of the issue with a team delivering at this high level is, the question I always have is, have you set your team's expectations going in? Have you had an expectations meeting with every member of your team prior to them coming on board? And by the way, if you haven't sat down and had an expectations meeting with every member of your team, it's never too late. We recommend that you sit down with every member of your team that directly reports to you as an advisor once every 4 months. So just like with clients, we recommend you sit down with your team 3 times per year. To set these expectations and to go through and review the key performance measures that you're expecting from every team member. But the expectations are that that you need to set for every single team member. They need to know this coming in so that they're not surprised when they get into this environment. And that is that this is a high performance team environment. We expect high performance from every member of the team. And that shouldn't be surprising once we get into it, okay? So a team where the expectations are not set well in advance, they get into this and they ultimately realize that, this is a higher standard than they have been accustomed to. So let's say you acquire onto your team a tax accountant or a financial planner or an estate lawyer, and they're very good at what they do. But once they get into your team environment, they're not performing as team players at the level that you need them to play. And so they may discover after they get onto your team that they're very good at what they do, but quite frankly, they're not as they're not up to the standards of your team. So the question becomes, have you set the standards up front? Is everybody on your team fully aware before they get into this that you have established a high performance team environment and that on your team, you measure the success of the team, and that is to say the individual team members, by referrals. So if you're getting a lot of referrals from clients, that's the measure of success. If you're not getting referrals from clients, then does your team understand before they come into the environment that you're going to be looking to each and every single member of the team to make sure that they're pulling their weight and doing what they need to do? You know, are they contributing to the value the client's receiving in such a way that the client would be encouraged and spontaneously want to introduce your team to others? So is everybody on the team performing at that highest standard that is close to the client standards that will allow the client or encourage the client or compel the client to feel like they are going to want to introduce their friends and acquaintances to everybody, to your team? And third, that our team will continue increasing value to clients until we're receiving more referrals than we can handle. That this is, you know, the process of mastery might be never ending. So you have a subject matter expert that thinks, okay, we draw a line in the sand and this is the level of service that we're willing to provide and that's it. Versus, does the team member understand that line is never drawn? That what the way you draw this line of the value that we provide to clients is we keep increasing the value to clients until we start getting referrals. And as long as they know that up front, you're creating a likelihood that these high standards are well understood and are not a surprise to anybody on your team as they get into it. And, you know, your job is to, you know, and then as you get into this, if you need to start pressing on the team to putting forth more effort to deliver higher client value to clients, you're going to start hearing things from your team. Sometimes it's excuses. Sometimes it's just dilemmas that they're confronted with or obstacles or roadblocks or bottlenecks that they are members of your team are encountering in finding time to make, deliver greater value to clients, whatever the case. It's your job to hear the excuses or the reasons. You know, it's important that you as a leader help your team understand what they're facing. And if they are facing challenges, it's okay as a team leader for you to help them work through these challenges. But understand this, what the client's looking for is results. The client's not looking for excuses. The client, if they're going to be paying you a compensation that's above average in our industry, then they don't want to hear anything other than the value that they are expecting from you. They want to see standards that are close to their own. So don't allow members of your team to be complacent. I think this is the one thing that that I see that is a big trap. You have a member of your team that's not pulling their weight. You have client meeting after client meeting where this particular team member doesn't contribute. So you need to make sure that everybody on your team is contributing. Everybody on your team understands that they are to increase client value until we receive referrals. And I think this old cliche about hire slow and fire fast is really, really important here. It's so easy to get people onto your team, to invite people onto your team that are really good at what they do, but they just are not capable of delivering at this level. And my point is that the old cliche is hire slow. In other words, talk to your potential team subject matter expert candidates long enough before you invite them onto your team that you're, in your own mind, convinced that they're capable of delivering at this high level, that they not only are good at what they do in their narrow field of finance, but they are also intrigued by a high performance team environment. So hire slow, make sure you're carefully adding team members who understand the deal before they get in. Once they get in, there are some things that you'll never be able to know until you've actually worked with a team member for a while. If an individual on your team is not delivering, then be prepared to disengage from that team member very, very quickly. One of the biggest mistakes that business owners make is in not disengaging from team members who just are not a good fit. I'll never forget, years ago, I read a book, very short book, but a very compelling book by Brian Tracy called How to Hire and Keep the Best People. And after all these decades, the thing that I remember the most about that book is a comment that the author made the comment that he made was the first time, the best time to fire an member of your team is the first time that it crosses your mind. And I remember reading that thinking, that's a bit harsh. I think because at the time I was thinking all the time, there were people on my team I need to disengage from. Their standards are not high enough. But the point that he's making is the best time to disengage from someone on your team or to fire someone on your team is the first time it crosses your mind, is because once you start seeing clues that someone's standards are not high enough, that is unlikely to change. If you encounter careless errors, if you encounter an attitude that's not embracing of, increasing standards, increasing client value, I think what Brian Tracy's trying to convey is that's unlikely to improve. And so hire slow, fire fast. I think it's a cliche at this point, but it is true. And I would just say, encourage your team, but protect your clients. It is a leadership dilemma. So, I love my team. My team I work with closely. I see my team more often than I see my clients, any individual client, because as a team, we're working together to serve these clients. So I view part of my job is to encourage my team, to be there and hold their hand when they're struggling, to help them identify obstacles and work through them. Certainly, I don't want to be perceived as cold-hearted, because you should not be. You should be there encouraging and supporting your team. But I encourage you to encourage your team, but I'm telling you, your job is to protect your clients. And I'm saying sometimes that means protecting your clients from your team. So I would just leave you with this point, and then we'll move on to the final question of the day. It is, you've established a lot of resources for your team. And part of the resources are the mindset and the standards that you're putting in place as a part of this program. So the question is, if you've chosen the right team, the proper resourceful team that has accepted high standards and understands that we're going to continually increase the standards and continue to increase client value until we get referrals, then my question to you is this: what more does your team need in order for you to become indispensable to your clients, other than nothing at all? I mean, what I have found is there's very few resources after I've skillfully and carefully described the standards to my team. Here's what we're doing. Here's what competence looks like. Here's what excellence looks like. Here's what we're delivering to clients. My job is to be crystal clear on setting those high standards and be very clear about what we're delivering to clients. Other than that clarity, my job is to bring people onto the team that are resourceful and capable. And success, in part, is an attitude. And to bring on board to the team successful people whose attitudes are very good and very positive and very optimistic about what it is that we're trying to accomplish here. So what more does your team need to become indispensable to your clients? Probably nothing at all. If you've chosen the right team members, you and your team can do this thing. Others have done it. It can be done. You can deliver at a level that your clients are very impressed with. You can deliver at a level that shows that you're competent. You can deliver at a level that actually makes you become irreplaceable. And you can deliver with a competent, capable team at a level where you're, 95% of your clients actually rate you as being indispensable. So is your team capable of taking the resources that you've provided with them and running? And I'm saying running very fast with those resources and with whatever, with that, with those alone, without much more than you've provided them up to this point. Let me tell you, you have right now more than I ever had as I was beginning to build my business over the last 30 years. So I am telling you that success is in the attitude of the people around you. So look at the people around you. Do they have a process of their own? Are they skilled? Are they excellent? Do they know what excellence looks like? What evidence do you have is, what evidence do you have that your team knows what excellence looks like? If you're not sure, sit down with your team and ask them, what do you think excellence looks like in whatever their narrow field is? If it's a tax accountant, what does excellent tax planning look like? If it's money management, what does excellence look like when it comes to money management? When it comes to financial planning, same question. Insurance, all these areas of personal finance. Sit down with your team members and make sure and establish that they have the right attitude, they understand what excellence looks like, and they're committed to delivering. Okay, the last question of the day, kind of along the same theme. Another advisor shares, I'm frustrated. I have invested the last 6 months building my deliverables team. And when he's talking about this team, he's talking about his deliverables team of subject matter experts. This would be the tax expert, financial planning, money management, estate planning, and insurance planning experts. So I now have 5 subject matter experts, but now 2 of them don't seem to be working out. They don't ever contribute in our meetings. Well, we've talked a little bit about this. So I just wanted to make one final point as this question came in this month. I think it's very dangerous for you as an advisor to believe that once your team is built, that every deliverables team member is going to be right for your team. I think it's one of the most frustrating things for advisors to get their team in place, only to realize that a team member or two, now that they're on board, actually aren't working out. And so what I'm going to tell you is that your deliverables team is never built. And it's better for you setting your own expectations to realize that you are going to have some turnover. For example, most of you advisors, when we start working together in the Advisor Pact monthly program, you have some sort of administrative support person that you've already got in your office, somebody that you are loyal to, somebody that you've worked with for a while. And I'm telling you that the vast majority of advisors who ultimately implement successfully have had to hire a different administrative manager from the one that they started with. Or if when I say they've had to hire a different administrative manager, it's not to say that they've had to disengage from their existing administrative manager. Perhaps it's just a reassignment or a shifting of duties or something like that. It's just that the administrative manager that the advisor has had all these years, the majority, that is to say more than 50% of advisors have had to go out and hire a different individual with different skills, someone who's more willing, someone who's more able to increase standards or to do what we're talking about, what we've been talking about in this session all day today. In other words, looking for an administrative manager who has standards at or above the clients, certainly above what the advisors are. So it's very difficult to hire an administrative support person whose standards are higher than the advisor. But that's exactly what we're looking for. And more than half of advisors end up having to get somebody else into that position. So I just want to reiterate what we've more or less been talking about today, and that is there are some things you'll never know about a team member until you get them on board and work together. So as much as you interview in advance and do your best at trying to understand how someone works or what their work ethic is and, you know, how they operate in their methodology and so forth, there's still, no matter how good a job you do of that in advance, there's still some things you will never know until you actually are working side by side with this person. with a subject matter expert, it's almost always the thing that you'll never know until you work with them is how good of a team player are they. You have to actually see it in action. And there are two areas of being a team player that we see as being a problem. That is not to say that every subject matter expert that comes on board to your team is going to have these two problems. It's just that if there's a problem, it's usually one or both of these two things. And you'll never know until you work with them. One is an individual willing to collaborate? So let's take a subject matter expert as an example. Like, let's say you acquire a tax expert onto your team. Or let's say you invite an estate planning lawyer onto their team. They could be exceptional at what they do. They could be extraordinary professionals in the area of their of personal finance in their narrow field of finance. They could be very, very good at what they do. But what we find out is they're unwilling to collaborate with the others on the team. They're unwilling to be responsive to others who are reaching out to them, emailing them, or returning phone calls. Or they are not the type of person who will pick up the phone as a tax expert and call the money manager and collaborate over a client issue, or pick up the phone and call the estate planning lawyer and so forth. You know, what you find out is over time whether an individual is willing to collaborate with the others on your team. And you will not know that until you get them into your team environment. The other is, are they willing to share all their work? So an individual, a subject matter expert, could be superb at what they do, but they don't do their work in a way that they can submit it, or that they're willing to submit it to your administrative manager so that their work can be shared with the others. One of the key aspects of our methodology that makes it valuable is that the team is collaborating with each other, and the team is sharing their work with each other so that the others on the team can benefit from the work that the others are doing. So if you're a tax expert and you're doing a tax projection, it's all the analysis and background work. You know, is this team member making all that background source work available to the others on the team? And if there are many members of your team who are sharing their work, is this team member actually reviewing the work of the others? So it is just something to keep an eye on. Once you get a great team member in place, to immediately start assessing, are they collaborating with others? Are they sharing their work? Are they reviewing the work of others? These are the key things that help you understand whether this team member is going to work out or not. And my point is, decide this quickly. So you may have decided and invited a member, decided very quickly that somebody's very good at what they do. You may know that for a fact from having worked with them in the past, or just the research that you've done into their background. But once you get them on the team, what you and your administrative manager need to assess and interact with them quickly about is their willingness to collaborate. You may be pleasantly surprised. They may immediately jump in to the environment and start picking up the phone and calling the other team members. They may start emailing back and forth and asking questions. Some team members have just been waiting their entire professional career to get into an uplifting, positive, collegial environment like you have created with this team to benefit clients. Sharing their work. They may start providing all the background of their analysis, all the mathematics behind their recommendations, actively sharing all the source documents having to do with what drives the advice and recommendation and action items that they're creating for clients. If they do, then great. If they're not, that's a big red flag. And then finally, just reviewing the work of the others. So if you're making all this work available to your team, then just monitor to make sure when you have a new team member that they are actually looking at the work of the others and, leveraging that work to make their own decisions. It's amazing when a really talented subject matter expert looks at the analysis of another subject matter expert. It's just incredible how they pick up on all kinds of things that are related to their narrow field of finance, or to say it another way, they have their own professional perspective on the work that others are doing. So If a money manager's sharing their work on what they're about to recommend to a client, the tax accountant may look at that work of the money manager and have all kinds of tax opinions about what the recommendations are about to be made. So, but you'll never know this until you begin working with a team member. So I think it's just much safer as an expectation for you as a team member to just admit and acknowledge that your team, deliverables team, is never fully built. You're always building and improving your team. And quite frankly, once you get your team in place, you may discover that you immediately have to start shopping to replace a team member because as good as they are at what they do, they are not good team players. And you've got to, if they don't shape up, you're going to have to ship them out quickly and replace them with somebody who can be a great team player. So that's it for this Advisor Pack Monthly session. We wish you all the best in implementing. And until next month, I'm Mark Little.